This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, this is Lou Roberts.
This is Tyrese Campbell.
And you're listening to the Every Step Along the Way podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very, very happy episode of Every Step Along the Way. Now, joining me tonight is my ever... Oh, no, he's not here. Michael Stockley will not be joining us tonight. No, he's got overexcited at Stoke's 2-0 win over Middlesbrough. We've had to tuck him into bed early. So, yes, he'll be back, no doubt, for Friday's Preston podcast. But yes, joining me tonight to look over the wonderful victory over Middlesbrough and ahead to the game against Leeds is our very own, what would you call yourself, mate? How are you, Tom? What's your title?
Jack of all trades, that's what I usually say.
Our very own Jack of all trades. How are you, Tom? You all right, mate?
Yeah, mate, I haven't felt like this on a Saturday night for quite a while, to be honest. It's been a good day, hasn't it?
It has. It's been, do you know what? It's been very, very tiring as well, though. I think it was bit of a roller coaster. I know it doesn't sound it. You look at it, you think, what, 2-0, scored a goal in each half. What, you know, doesn't seem that much of a bit of a roller coaster. But, you know, I think. Just the whole build-up, I think, sort of the 3-4 day build-up, the game had, and obviously then you're waiting all day, aren't you, from Saturday, from when you get up, you're thinking about the match, you get in there, you see the team, you're wondering how the fans going to react to what the club have said and what, you know, obviously what John Walters has said. You know, will we start well? We talked on the last podcast about the importance of the first goal. Are we going to be able to, you know, get that first goal? And, I mean, we'll get into it in a minute, but just have the whole build-up and then everything. And then after, for me, I'll be honest, as I walked out the ground, it was just like a massive just sort of like sigh of relief. Like, I let it all out. Like, oh.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's been a long build-up. And on the way to the ground today, I was just... I was optimistic, and I said to you guys, I said, I've let myself get too optimistic. I don't know why I do it to myself, because usually it all crumbles down on me after. I think the build-up and then obviously the game, it was only one goal each half, but it just seemed to keep going and things were happening left, right and centre. My throat feels like it's got a million pins in it, but I don't even care. it was a great atmosphere, and yeah, I feel the same. As soon as I walked out of that ground, I just kind of looked at the sky and said, thank you. Please, thank you. That's all we needed.
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it? And I think I was slightly worried as well as to if it hadn't gone well today, where would we have turned exactly? Because it felt to me that the club had put all their eggs in the basket for today. Every card, every joker card, you know, whatever they got, it was all on the table, wasn't it, today? You know, they had the legend there, didn't they? Obviously, Robert Huth come back, get the crowd. They had a battle cry from Johnny Walters asking them, you know, the fans to sort of get behind them and everything. And the players wanted it. And they put about 35 pre-match tweets and posts out on sort of Twitter and Facebook and that about the game and getting behind the lads and bring the noise. You know, you do that, we'll do the rest of it. And you just think, if it had gone wrong, they couldn't have repeated any of that. So how exactly would they have, you know, kept people on side?
Yeah, I don't know how they would have done it, to be honest. And I said to my mate when I got there, I said, if we lose today after all of this, then I'm just going to... It would have been the most deflated I've ever been. Because, like you say, all the eggs are in the basket for today. We've got a game against Leeds on Tuesday, which, let's be honest, we're probably not going to get anything from. Although, you know what we're like when we play against teams we shouldn't be beating. But if we had lost today, lost against Leeds, and then if we went into the Preston game, which is going to be very tough, if we had lost that as well, I think mathematically we wouldn't have been down and out. I think the players would have just, and the fans would have just not given up, but not seen a way back.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. I mean, like I say, it would have been a real struggle to create the same kind of sort of anticipation for a game as there was going into this one. And it was. I mean, we walked in there. There was a lot of people. You could hear murmurings. I mean, I sort of walked down from sort of Blurton Way, and you could, and sort of Erin Cross, and you could hear people talking about, you know, the Walters thing and the atmosphere, and so it was. Yeah, it got around the whole thing, and we got in there, and there was a little bit of a sort of a buzz, weren't there? And they say that the teams come out, and as the teams were being read out, the crowd had already started, aren't they, singing and that. And I know that the guy I went with said, you know, I've never, you know, this season, I've not seen anything like that from the fans. You know, before the kickoff, they were really, you know, up for it so much already. It definitely worked what Johnny Walters had asked for.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was a bit sceptical of whether it would work. I went there with the full intention of, you know, giving him what he asked for. I thought it'd just be the same old where we'd have a couple of Graham Stokes at the beginning and it kind of die off. But yeah, I was the same as you. As soon as the singing started, before they'd even come out, I thought, yeah, this is going to be a good atmosphere today. And then one thing I did notice, when the players did come out to giving each other high fives and everything just before they kick off, Laurent was walking around and he was absolutely pumped for it, and I hope someone's got a video of it, because he was, I'm surprised he didn't break someone's arms, he was high-fiving him that hard. And yeah, that's when I knew, I just had a good feeling. Luckily it all works out to plan, because if we had done all that and lost, he would have been like, well, we give you what you asked for and we've still got nothing in return. So I think, yeah, it would have been bad going on.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Loren there. I mean, he was back starting once he had quite a considerable chunk of the game at Cardiff last week, and impressed enough to come in. So he came in, Kundal dropped out. Loren also took the armband as well, which is, incidentally, we had three captains in midfield today, didn't we? We had
we did.
Former captain Baker, the current captain Loren, and the captain in waiting in Berger. So yeah, so we've got obviously the Loren came in for Kundal, and Hoover came in for Junior Chamberlain, who was going to be out for a couple of months with an injury, and obviously Thompson's too much banned, so Gooch came in for him at left back. So just the three changes for Shiri Roulette. How did you feel, obviously, at 2 minutes past two when you've seen that team news?
I think the back four kind of read itself out with injuries and suspensions, like you've said. The midfield three, I was very happy to see, because I wanted to see them three together. I felt like it would have had a good balance. And if I'm honest, I think them three were incredible today. I think they just complement each other so well. We got Berger sitting back a little bit. You got Laurent, who's back and forward, and then Baker, who's a little bit more attacking-minded. And then the front three, I mean, I thought they were good last week, but them three, I think they're the first three on the team sheet now, especially the wingers. Bay and Manhoef just ripped them to shreds. I mean, Bay made Luke Ayling look like he was a Sunday league player. Absolutely ripped him apart.
Yeah, and to think, you know, Luke Ayling was a Premier League player last season.
Yeah, he was,
top end player for Leeds, obviously, this season. And like I say, he just did what... There was no match for him at all, was there? He's just glided past in time again. And I mean, like I say, you had Juno on one wing and Manhoef on the other. Some of the touches and the little just sort of flicks and it's not for show either, is it? He's not doing it just to show off. He's doing it because it's the best way to get past somebody or take somebody on. And I think he looks like a real player. I think when he's fully settled, he's going to be a cracking player going forward for this club.
Yeah, I think he's certainly more game by game as well, isn't he? It feels like every game he's growing that confidence and he's doing them little moves more and more. I mean, I think up on in our little group chat earlier that I think it was like four or five occasions the ball's bouncing and every single time the fullback came out to him, he just dinked it over him and he was off. I was listening to the Rob Adcock spaces earlier and somebody said Junho and Manhoef are like Berrian and Shaqiri reincarnated. And yeah. I can't even disagree because they genuinely do give me them vibes. I think the goal that Bay scored today, which we'll probably get on after, that was a real Berrian goal, that. Where he's just side-footed it, bang corner, made it look easy, but in reality it was a cracking goal.
Yeah, so we just need to find ourselves a little on Arnautovic now, don't we?
Yeah, that's what we're missing. Complete the trio, yeah.
Yeah, so Manhoef, like we say, just... the little tricks and it all seems to be with a purpose for me. And I said to Jason, I'll go with that. What I really like about him as well is like he has come ready for the English game, and he can be quite physical as well. And he knows about chasing back. He understands the role that he's playing. And, you know, he's not somebody who just watches his teammates defend. He gets back and helps out. I mean, he was buzzing around all sorts of areas when we needed to, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, for the first game, you could see he had that, couldn't you? He was instantly, he's sprinting back full pelt. I mean, how the guy didn't run out of steam earlier, I don't know. But yeah, I think... with the physicality side, I think he didn't get clattered, but you know he had people grabbing on him and you know on his toes every time he got the ball, pretty much. And 9 times out of 10, he was getting the better of them. So yeah, I think he's a lot more ready than what some of them were. And obviously he's getting better game by game, I think. So he could be a massive part.
As we're talking that way, you know, this is pre-season, but you know, we're still in the bottom three as it stands. But yeah. If we can stay, if we can now build on this and stay up, if we've got, you know, like a man off on one side, Juno 12 months, you know, further down the line on the other wing, obviously also can drop and play centre midfield in other weeks. It's like, you know, all the recruitment areas that we can bring people in. I'm actually, you know, there's players in here, there are players in this squad that really excite me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's been some games where it's just been terrible across the board, but in most of the games we've played good football, it's been the simple stuff, leaking silly goals and not taking our chances. I think if we manage to stay up, summer focus obviously is clear now. We need a centre-back. Well, probably going to need two, actually, because Minnelli will be going back. We need... I'd probably say two left backs, to be fair, because Stevens doesn't look like he's going to be able to keep fit. And a striker, someone who can start burying the chances. I do like Ennis. He runs a lot. I think it's exactly what we need at the minute. But yeah, we do need... it's the same old story. We need that 15-plus goal scorer, which obviously they don't grow on trees. You've got and Championship clubs can't afford to buy them. It's a case of trying to find someone who fits the system, and if it works, it works. We've tried to buy tried and tested, and obviously, look what happened with Dwight Gayle, so it obviously doesn't work. But yeah, I think a striker, and then mainly defence, I think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there, and get a permanent goalkeeper in. And yeah, talking of goalkeepers, I mean, what a difference this save could make. This could actually be, you know, when you talk about like turning points in a season and moments that flip things around. I mean, what were we? I think we were about 5-6 minutes into the game, if I remember rightly. And like I say, there's been a couple of sort of passes. Do you know what? If there's been that much going on, I can't even really remember the build-up without watching it back. but what, all I remember is there was a Middlesbrough player bearing down on goal. And Daniel Everson's come like a cheetah, sprinted from his six-yard box and just threw himself at the player's feet, ante, to block the shot. And then we've defended well and got rid of it and sort of built on that moment. But if that ball ends up in the back of the net, you know, I do wonder what would have happened, because it's easy enough to say that the crowd were massively behind him and we would have stayed with him and would have done that. But it's like I say, that's easy to say, harder to actually do, isn't it? Especially with a crowd that's already teetering on... how shall we say, having a short fuse with the club at recent times.
Yeah, I think it's these moments where usually it's against us rather than in our favour. It's usually us having the chance and the save being made, or us having a chance and missing the target. So it's nice to be on the other foot. I think, it was a good save, cracking save. And I think when he made that save, that kind of riled the fans up even more. And a lot could be said about him today with his distribution. I mean, them kicks, it was like a mirror image every time. Every single kick just swung outwards and went out of play. But I'm sure everybody will let him off with a clean sheet and obviously saving that shot at 0-0, which probably would have led to the game looking very, very different.
Yeah, exactly, because then all of a sudden we knew we'd got to score twice. I think that's what does it for a lot of players. And we mentioned last week on the pod that, you know, if anything, I don't personally think these players lack ability. I think they are very, very fragile mentally. I think that's where the issues come from. And like you say, if they'd gone 1-0 down, you just don't know what would have happened. But talking about Big Canty, it's usually us missing him. Man Huff then sort of blotted his copybook the only real time in the afternoon, didn't he? How did he miss the target with that? You know, a great little move. High press, won the ball. Little interchange with the midfielders. Played him in. I just thought, here we go, just waiting for the net to bulge.
Yeah, I mean, you could say it was his weaker foot, but even still, I think you've got to at least hit the target there, haven't you? I tell you what, though, when he did miss that shot, I thought, that's the moment. I thought that's the moment where everything's going to flip on its head, and I was half expecting them to take the goal kick and score, because that's usually what happens. We'll miss a big chance, they run down the opposite end, 1-0. I don't know. I don't know how we missed it. I can't even give an explanation for it, to be honest.
I mean, I talk about sort of like missed chances. I know it's not sort of going in any chronological order here, but there was a few in the second half on the chances. I mean, I thought first half it was quite an even match. I think we shaded it, but Middlesbrough were definitely into it. And if we'd have gone in half time about 2-2, I don't think anyone could have complained really. You know, both sides had big chances and they didn't put away. I mean, there was the one. The other one for Middlesbrough was Wilmot, I think, was trying to sort of shepherd a bouncing ball back to the goal, back to Everson, Monty, and Everson, there was a bit of miscommunication, and the strikers sort of knocked it around Ivar Ante and then tried to put it in from a tight angle. I think Marco Rose just slid in. And as this, in his slide, he's, you know, intercepted this shot and just killed the ball dead about a yard in front of the line. I thought that could very easily have gone wrong. That is some real top-notch defending there for me, just to, you know, to kill the ball dead and not end up tangling in the back of the net with it under your feet or something. I think you quite often see defenders do that, don't you? Especially, you know, not sort of top-level ones.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was another moment where I thought, goal here. As soon as he took it around, Iverson, yeah, had the shot, and he was really good for Rose, to be honest. He could have easily hit the wrong part of his body and gone in. I think there was just on missed chances. What was it?
I'll be honest, I was at that point as well. I was waiting. I mean, I love Bemel. I think he's great, obviously. You know, I don't think he's been fantastic lately. I think since his injury, his form's not been there, but he was a nasty injury, so I'll let him off. You know, he's building back up. I thought they were both better today. But I was just waiting, the way our luck's been, if Rose slides in, stops the ball dead as he's going past, and Wilmot, seeing the danger of a stationary ball, a yard from the line, just runs up and boots it and it going like against Rose into the net or something. And we're like, oh, for goodness sake.
that would be the most Stoke thing ever this season.
All like straight into Rose's face and back forward in the top.
He wouldn't even surprise me. That's the worst thing.
Yeah, probably would have concussed him as well. At the same time, would have had to bring Kieran Clark in.
Oh no!
But yeah, I didn't. Like I say, second half, I thought we had a lot more chances, and there was the one that the pressing that it was sort of like it was almost like Gengen press once in second half. How high up we were and. Everybody was pushing right onto their opposite number, not giving them. I mean, the amount of times we won the ball sort of in their third, and there was that one time where we won it like this was about 8 yards from goal, and Josh Lorenz sort of rolled it to Baker, into him. Baker sort of like I think he'd put pressure on the defender, and he's turned round and the ball's played to him, and he's like, oh, I don't know what to do, I don't know where anybody is. And I think then he laid it back to Loren, didn't he? And Loren sort of had a shot from a bit of a tight angle, and the keeper sort of put it behind for a corner. And then they sort of looked at each other. And Loren looked at him and said, why didn't you just finish that? I'm just taking the ball. And he sort of like pointed to his eyes and then pointed around as if say, I got it. But in that split second, I didn't know where the defenders were. I didn't know where the goal was. I've literally just turned around, the ball's like at my feet. He's got his back to goal and he's like, oh, yeah, I'll just have it back.
I think that was another one of their moments as well, where if that was the other end, it would have been buried, no doubt about it. And yeah. I said to my mate straight away, I said, this is the difference. And I thought that was the turning point as well. It's just something like that happens, it's just like, I've just got this horrid fear of them just running down the other end and scoring.
It's because it's happened so many times, Tom.
It says that, honestly, it gives me nightmares.
I think we like today, where we were sat as well, it was all a bit like, oh, that was the one. That was the chance. That could have made it 2-0.
Yeah, that's what it is now. That's what it's labelled as. That's the one.
But yeah, I think that could have made it 2-0. The chance, the goal that made it 1-0, what a goal that was. First home goal for Juno. Following up from his opening Stoke strike last weekend, and this one had a little bit more flair in it than the follow up from the free kick last week, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, it was a Bojan-esque goal. I mean, he did really well because Aylin. I haven't seen a close up of it, but I heard somebody say that Aylin was like snapping at his ankles at the time, and he just sent Aylin flying and just. Taking a touch, and I think the finish is brilliant. Just front post, nice and low, side-footed it. Great goal.
Just stay calm, didn't he? Just complete calmness.
Yeah, it's such a composed finish.
Yeah, he hasn't tried to lace it or anything, has he, from there, or panicked. He just took his time, sized up, and just picked the right moment and the right sort of execution, and just pinged it in the bottom corner. But like I say, the difference in Jun Ho now from the player that arrived in August, the player we have now, the physicality. I remember those first few games on the wing, and he hadn't. I'll be honest, he looks like he hadn't got a clue what he was supposed to be doing. I think centre midfield, he's always been all right. He's always, but now, for me now, he's one of the first names on the team sheet. Like I said, the progression in his game, especially on that left wing, is just amazing in just a few months. He's such a talent.
Yeah, I think his overall play is improved so much. Taking people on, his confidence, his passing. I actually said a couple of weeks ago, and I keep saying it to everybody I speak to, I said he's literally got everything. He just needs the end product. And if he gets the end product, he will genuinely be. And this isn't even with my red tinted glasses on. He will be one of the best in the league because people just can't get near him. And if he's scoring goals whilst doing that as well, he is going to be some player. I don't think he'll be around for long if he does keep on doing it. But should be a hefty transfer fee if he does move on, which is obviously part of the reason we brought him here, so we can reinvest with the profit. But yeah, it will. It'll beat my heart when he goes because he is turning into a cracking player, and I think he's going to go to the top.
Yeah, he's got he's got an engine, he's got the close control. Like I say, he's now starting to add goals to his game as well, like I say, an end product, goals, assists. He's got the physicality, doesn't mind getting stuck in. He's like a little terrier trying to win the ball as well. And I think when we're trying to do a high press, he's such an asset to have. But it's interesting that we were sort of saying when we were watching him that he actually, if you watch him closely, I think he's very good at pushing the lines with referees. Like, he will do, basically, I'll call it now as I see it, he does a lot of fouls and gets away with them. Like, when he's over players, he can be over physical with them. But because he comes from South Korea and he's a very slight in sort of physique, I think he's actually quite, you know, filled out quite well, hasn't he, now? But because he comes across as a slight guy from South Korea, I think the players are like, I can't be going, you know, being pushed off the ball by him. And also, in the same way as sort of Peter Crouch and probably Wesley Wood now, used to get a lot of free kicks given against them that weren't fouls purely because of how big they were. The referees are like, oh, well, that's obviously a foul. It's like, no, it's not. I'm 6'7", mate. I think with Juno, it's the other way. The referees look at him and go, he's not going to foul you. Look at him. That's not a foul. And I'm not complaining. More to it. You keep going.
Keep going, lad. Yeah, I think the same, to be fair. I think the other thing as well, he's very quiet on the pitch, and he's never given the ref grief, so the ref probably doesn't even notice him half the time. At the end of the day, you got a winger with a fullback on you, especially someone like Ayling, and he's giving it back. I bet the referee kind of enjoyed it, to be honest. I mean, I enjoyed it, especially when he sent Ayling flying for that goal. It was brilliant, because Ayling was obviously trying to wind the fans up with all the build-up to the game by taking, you know, 30 seconds to pick a ball up and whatnot. But yeah, I think he's definitely got some physicality about him now. And he's got like that, the fire in his belly, you can tell. Especially after he scored, he was absolutely flying, and you could tell he was loving his time out there.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, he, like say, with the goal, the other thing I did notice with it as well, like, is he puts his foot to shield the ball when Ayling goes flying. Ayling's coming on the sort of the inside of him, to the right hand side of him, and he just sort of puts his foot across the front of him, which I think then he sort of leans into and sends him flying. It's like that awareness now and that knowledge that you know, this is the English Championship and you are going to have to protect yourself and protect the ball at all times, really. And, you know, expect somebody to come flying into you from all different angles. And it's like he's learned that so quickly, and so he's adapted now. And it does give me, if we can keep hold of him, so much probably does depend on, you know, what league we're playing in next year, then, you know, he'll be a massive asset going in the future.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think him and Berger are probably the two who are going to be headhunted the most. And I'd love them both to stay, but you know, he was already, you know, he was already known before they even signed them that this is the model they're going to work on now, is buying abroad, selling on for profit. Let's just hope they can reinvest the money and have a better hit rate than what they currently have. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm hoping that because they haven't got to spread the money so thinly, like, they haven't got to go out and get an entire new squad this time. They can concentrate on making less but better signings.
Yeah,
success.
Yeah, I was speaking to my mate about it, to be honest. I didn't realise, like, the guys who we've actually spent, you know, quite a bit of money on are the ones that are performing, excluding Mai, obviously. But I don't think Mai's bad, it's just he had a poor attitude, but obviously he's overcome that now because he'll be coming back into the team, apparently, once he's recovered from this injury. But the likes of Berg and Manhoef, Bay Jr., who we've spent the money on, they all seem to, you know, to the best of performers, excluding the guys who are already here. So, yeah, like you say, instead of spending 50 million on 24 players, we could, you know, if we get, say, 20 million for Big or whatever, just a random figure, we could be spending 20 million on 4 or 5 players instead. So hopefully we get better quality.
Yeah, I think if anyone bids anywhere near 20 million, I think you'll probably be off.
Oh, yeah. John Coates will be flying him in his helicopter.
And saying, right, Jared, who am I picking up on the way back? Who's the replacement? Where? What country am I flying to now?
How far is Plymouth?
Yeah. How much for that Morgan Wickedicker bloke? I'll play 70 head. Yeah, so, I mean, sort of getting back to sort of the rest of the game, I mean, like we said, the first half, I felt was a little bit more even. The second half, though, we just took control. I think they continually tried to play it out from the back, and if that's sort of another nail in the coffin for trying to pass the ball out from the back, is that, you know, we took advantage of it so many times, didn't we? And like I say, we won the ball back so often. It just, they invited so much pressure on themselves, and I couldn't quite make my mind up on the centre backs, obviously, that we tried to sign. Is it Matt Smith, with the guy we tried to sign from Brighton, didn't we, a couple of years ago? And he went there instead. I was like, would I have him in this side? Matt Clark,
Matt Clark, that's it. Yeah, I was trying to think then. Smith's in somewhere. Yeah, Matt Clark. If I'm honest, he doesn't. I don't know about him much, to be fair. So I don't want to comment on it too much, but he didn't look like somebody who can play out from the back, to be honest with you. I thought he looked a bit sluggish and a bit robotic. But yeah, I think the pressing in the second half was brilliant. It wasn't pressing to an extent where we're leaving gaps. It was kind of, you know, press, the nearest man would press, the ball gets passed, the next man would press. Instead of having, you know, 4 or 5 players running to one guy and leaving a massive gap. I think tactically he got it bang on today. And he said in the press conference after that, basically he eliminated a lot of the risk elements to the system, which is obviously what the fans have been crying out for, with the inverted wing backs and whatnot, because it's clearly not working with these players. And he's going to need a window in the summer to get that implemented, I think. So he's, you know, made a bit more lean back. And I think the balance of pressing and staying solid in the back was great today.
Yeah, I noticed that myself, that the full backs, and I think they both deserve a bit of praise. We'll probably talk about them now, but they were never sort of darting into the midfield areas where the I know I sort of said in the pod before and last week that for me, as much as he wants to stick to his values and stick to what he believes in, now isn't the time for that, because is he willing to risk his job and our championship status on continuing to do something that wasn't working? And it was good to see that he parked it. And I'm not saying he needs to park it forever, but for these next few games, until we get enough points, you know, whether that's in five, you know, whether we go on a bit of a run and that's in 5-6 games time, or whether it takes us up till the, you know, the last game against Bristol City. Until we are safe in this division, I think he just needs to park it, let the players play something they're familiar with and they're comfortable with. And then come the summer, he can say, right, lads, we're not going to do this, but you know what? When you come back at the end of June for pre-season training, you have got 6 weeks of learning this system, because this is how we're playing next season. And that's fair enough. He's got time to implement it. He's got friendlies to implement it in. People can go out there and sort of learn and develop into them roles. But right now, not the time. And it's good that he saw that himself. And that's a positive in a manager, because I think there's too many managers, I think, especially with stuff where they, like say, playing, doing things that aren't working and are costing their sides games, and they just keep doing it because they are sort of, they've pigeonholed themselves into this system or this style. And I think it shows a strong manager who's able to go away from his idealistics to play a different style.
Yeah, I think that's what we saw when Nathan Jones wants it with his diamond, the godforsaken diamond. He wouldn't let it go, would he? And he wouldn't let it go till the end. But yeah, I think the most important thing now, it was kind of a hybrid today. I think it was kind of like Alex Neil slash Schumacher, but in a positive way. So they kept the shape, but the pressing was there. But it wasn't any of this passing him on the back. It was always look forward, but, you know, don't get carried away and leave gaps at the back. And I think with the players we've got at the minute, I think it was bang on. And I'm hoping that this is a system he sticks to now. And hopefully we go, you know, I'm not expecting 5 wins in a row, but, you know, start picking up some more points rather than losing week in, week out with a win even there.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, like I said, looking at the fullbacks, I thought, you know, Lyndon Gucci's come in, he's been in and out, been on the right, been on the left, been on the wing, been a full-back, been a wing-back. But, you know, he come in and I thought he was really reliable today. He was Lyndon Gucci once, but this, you know, with the crowd up for it and sort of a relegation battle side, that's perfectly made for players like Gucci. And he's going to go out there, he's going to give you 100% every week, and you know that, you know, he's going to leave it all out there. And I think players like him as well, probably why Loren was brought in for Kundal maybe. If you get in an atmosphere going, they're the kind of players who can get stuck in and keep that atmosphere going, keep the fans up and cheering, especially with Stoke fans, you know. Not all supporters like that kind of stuff, but, you know, it's been proven over many, many years that Stoke fans love to see somebody showing a bit of commitment and getting stuck into the opposition.
Yeah, I thought Gooch was brilliant. I'm sure it helps that he was playing Middlesbrough, obviously being a honorary Macam. but yeah, I think Gooch was brilliant up to that Sunderland game, wasn't he? And then obviously the stuff happened online with social media, and he had to put a tweet out saying that, you know, he's enjoying being here and whatnot, which is, he shouldn't have needed to do. But yeah, I think the atmosphere today boosted everybody's confidence. And I think, going back to what you said earlier, they've shown that they can play football, because some of the performances have been brilliant. It's just, it was the confidence. And I think today the atmosphere is definitely 1,000,000% given a push, because it can't be a coincidence that, you know, Walter's message to the fans have turned up and produced an atmosphere like that, and they've come out 2-0 winners. And it, apart from that bit scrappy at the beginning, they never really looked in doubt either.
No, and I think if you want to talk one player who epitomises confidence and how it can affect players, and
Oh, I know where you're going here.
Yeah. And now that sort of, if it changes back, what a difference you can see. Take a bow, Keanu Hoover. I thought he was fantastic today. I thought he defensively, he was strong, he was solid. I don't think he lost a header. And I'm sure if you ask Keanu and asked him what the weakest point of his game was, I think he'd probably tell you it was heading. But, but you know, he was strong. And somebody said to me down at the game, they said, you know what? He said, I think he comes across as... it's one of them, when he's doing well, he's suave and he's cool, Jeremy, you know, because he's got that sort of languid Dutch way, auntie, where everything's sort of chilled and relaxed in his sort of body, you know, how he carries himself. And when you're going well, that's all good, and everyone thinks, oh, look how great he looks. But I think when he goes wrong, he just switches. People's opinion, oh, look at him, he doesn't care. Look at him, he can't be bothered. He's just stood there. And I think he obviously does, because if he didn't care, his confidence wouldn't be shot to pieces because he wouldn't care, so it wouldn't affect him. So for me, he really, I think he does care. I think that's pretty obvious. And I thought today, like I say, defensively, he was strong. I don't think he really lost out. I think there might have been, there was one time, I think, wasn't there, where did he sort of just miscontrol the ball, didn't he, and he went straight out. Other than that, I think everybody, I say the fans stuck behind him. And obviously he grew into that. And I think I said to you, didn't I, he got to about the 60-minute mark. And it was as if in his head he thought, I've got to an hour here and I haven't made a mistake. And all of a sudden he turned into last season's Hoover going forward then as well. He'd had the defensive solidity. And now he was adding all the attacking stuff into it as well. He was making runs and putting crosses in. And I thought, here we go. So it'll be nice to see whether he carries that forward into the next game as well. Or is he, again, going to be start Louis' game one mistake away from going back to what he was?
Yeah, I can... First off, I completely agree. First off, yeah, like I say, I think he had that poor touch, didn't he? And there was a moment where he made a pass to Manoff, and well, I think he was trying to get past Manoff actually, and he just hit Manoff, and he got a bit of a groan. But I don't think he really had any other options. I think he was trying to come in field, and Manoff just happened to be in the way, essentially. But yeah, I thought second half it was like something just clicked, and he was flying forward, and he was the Hoover of last season. Touches were brilliant. You know, he's little 1-2s getting around the outside, coming inside, whipping balls in. It was serious. Like he was him last season. He just came out of nowhere. And I'm hoping, like you say, I'm hoping he carries that into the next game, because he is definitely a confidence player. Today's proven that.
Yeah, and he's going to have you know, I don't think there are many more attacking outlets out there other than the Leeds squad. I mean, I think somebody said today that when they're not winning, all they do is just throw on another attacker. So if we do get into a positive position on Tuesday, he's going to have to stay focused and, you know, on his game right up until the final whistle. It's going to be a great test for him after today. I just hope that... He builds on it and it becomes a momentum thing with him, and he doesn't revert back to the Hoover that we've had, you know, for the majority of the 4 or 5 months, would you say?
Yeah, he's... I mean, obviously, he started the season great, didn't he? He got the first goal of the season. And when he scored that goal, I just thought...
And what a goal!
Yeah, he was a cracking goal, yeah. And obviously, that first day, got everybody's hopes up. I thought, me and my phone were saying, oh, finally, this is it. It's happening. And then we've ended up bottom three. But yeah, I think...
When you said against Rotherham, finally, it's happening, we're getting out of this league, we didn't think it'd be via the relegation part.
Yeah, definitely not. I thought we were going the other way. I think he's... definitely one of the most fragile players in terms of confidence, depicts performances. I don't think anybody's confidence is up at the minute because things aren't going well. But I think today's proven us as fans can help change that. And even if we don't get much luck on the road, because the away fans are always brilliant, I think if we can turn that stadium into a fortress for, I think, is it five home games remaining? Then five home games would be massive, especially if we can pick, you know, three wins and a draw up or whatever it is. It's going to be huge. So hopefully everybody sticks behind them. And it's, today wasn't just a one-off to please Johnny Walters. And I'm hoping, yeah, turn into a fortress for the rest of the season. Keep us up.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some favourable games, haven't we? We've got Bristol City, who are likely to have nothing to play for come the final day. We've got Plymouth, who, on the contrary to that, are probably going to be in the thick of it with us as it stands, with the ridiculous tightness of how the bottom of this league now looks.
It's going to be an interesting one, that, isn't it?
I mean, Norwich is banging form, aren't they? Huddersfield, they're going to be still in the mire, you'd imagine, by the time we get to play them. So, yeah, there's some very interesting sort of home games coming up and some very winnable ones as well. There's some, definitely we could go on a little home run. Probably do, you know, probably end up winning the last five or six home games of the season to go with the first five or six. It's just the middle part that we suffered a bit.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can have a March like last year as well, where we it was March, wasn't it, where we played all the teams who were up there and somehow came out of it unbeaten. I don't know how we did it, but yeah, I wouldn't mind that again.
Well, we're currently, I mean, if you look at the form table as it stands, last five matches, our next four games are all against sides who fare pretty well. I mean, Leeds are second with 13 points in the last five. Obviously, the only points they dropped were today, which actually was the first time they had nine consecutive wins, didn't they, before today when they played Huddersfield. And then we play away at Preston, who were fifth in that league for the last five matches. And then we play Norwich, who were fourth. And then after that, we play Hull, who were sixth. So we've got four games against the team banging form. However, this is the Championship, and you know what teams do, don't you? They go on a little good run, five, six games, and then they'll have three or four, five games where they're off it. That's generally how probably about 50, 60% of this league go through the season, isn't it, up and down. And the ones who get promoted are the ones who can sort of eke out two or three extra games when they're on a good run and end the bad ones a bit earlier. So if all these teams are on good runs now, you'd imagine, you know, we can end at least one of them, I reckon. Let's be positive. I reckon. Yeah.
I definitely feel more positive than I did yesterday.
Yeah.
Could beat anyone.
I tell you what, I am more positive about as well. And it's the second goal. So I'm more positive now about us taking corners. What a little, nice little training ground routine that was.
Yeah, it was great. I think the funniest thing about it was, as we were going to take the corner, my friend's little boy mentioned something about a scoring. And my friend said, "Don't be silly, it's a corner. We don't score from corners." And when he took the corner short, I said, "Goal." Next thing you know, it comes on to Baker, who hits it and he deflects and goes in. It's been a lesson learned there. Stop putting crosses in and start taking them short, essentially. But yeah, it was a great work. Obviously, works on in the training ground. I don't know if you seen Shuey talking after. He said he ran straight over to Galley because Galley was the one who came up with it by the sounds of it. But yeah, it's these little things that completely change a season, essentially, though, isn't it? You can put crosses in all day, but if there's nobody in on the end of them, you're never going to score, so you've got to try something else. And today it's paid off and got us a second goal and probably sealed the win and give Borough no hope for getting anything from it as well.
Well, this is it. I mean, I can't remember the last time we scored off a floated corner, if you like, or, you know, one put into win aerially. I know Michael Rose won quite a few headers, didn't he, against Coventry a couple of weeks ago? I think he won about three or four, but he didn't get any of them on target.
I think every single one went over, didn't it? I think in the end, I think he slapped himself in the head or something. Every single one went to the same place. He was over the bar, over the bar, over the bar.
I think he got that repetitive. The fans were like, oh. I'm like, it comes to something. Usually we're like, wow, we've won a header at a corner. And he'd done it that often that people were like, it wasn't we weren't impressed that we were winning the header. It was like, for God's sake, we'll just get this on target once. But yeah, the shot itself, some would say, was going straight into the goalkeeper. Wasn't the cleanest of strikes, probably would have been comfortable saves. But it took a little deflection and gone in. And you know what? What I say to that is, when you've got a penalty area there with about 15, 16 players in there, you just hit the ball. You just hit it. And if you don't, even if you don't make a clean strike, it doesn't matter, because all it takes is a little nick like that and it'll end up in the back of the net. And that's exactly what it does. If you take a touch and then play the ball back out wide for somebody else for a crossing or something like that, then that goal doesn't happen, does it? So I'm all for people just take a shot. I don't care that it took a deflection.
Yeah, it goes back to that old saying, doesn't it? If you don't buy a ticket, you're not going to win. I think one thing which, again, should be said after, one thing we tend to do from them positions is try ping it top corner, and 9 times out of 10 it goes over. Hit it hard and low. Wasn't the cleanest shot. Probably was going straight at the keeper, but it took a deflection and went in, and usually it's the other way around. So I'll take it. I don't care if it hits every single opposing player, hits the bar, hits the post, comes off the line and goes in. As long as it hits that net, I am sound with it.
I don't care if it hits the line and goes in, as long as the ref doesn't see.
I wish it hit that line today. He was winding me up. He was so bad.
The ref wasn't much better either. But
no.
We can say that because we won and people don't think it's sour grapes.
Yeah, exactly.
But yes, John Busby, you were not the same referee you refed us against Rotherham the first day of the season.
Yeah, he was very poor today. He was, wasn't good.
I think we've spoken about most of the players there, haven't we? The midfielders, probably the ones we haven't touched on too much. I loved the energy from Baker Loren. Berger just went around being Berger, and I thought he felt like he was quiet today, but I think he just kept things ticking over. Just kept things ticking over, and let other people impress and do the fancy stuff.
Yeah, I think he wasn't all on him today, was it? That was the difference. Usually it's him trying to make things happen, but today he had everybody else doing it with him. So he did go a little bit more unnoticed because he wasn't the good guy of a bad crop. He was kind of a good, one of the good guys out of a whole squad, basically. Earlier, it felt like we had the Laurent we love and the Baker we love playing together. And it's the first time both of them have been, on the game together, because usually it's one or the other, and they kind of replace each other in the starting lineup and whatever. But both of them were brilliant today. And that midfield three now for me is stuck. Just stay with it, because they were great.
For me, let's say the pair of them was great. And did you see what I loved about the second goal when it went in? You could see the emotion in the players. I mean, anyone who thinks that footballers don't care, or they don't put the effort in, they couldn't care less whether you win, win, lose or draw, they're happy taking money. You just look at the reaction to that second goal going in. Like you say, it's a deflection, so it's not as if it's the strike that they're celebrating as such, do you know what I mean? But it's just the fact that, we've got the ball in the back of that Middlesbrough net a second time, we've given ourselves a bit of breathing space, and 20 minutes ago, we feel like it's now really in our hands, even if something fluky happens down the other end and something totally out of the ordinary happens and the ball ends up in the net, in our net, we've got a bit of a safety blanket now because we're two up. And look at how they went sprinting over to the fans, and they all went to celebrate, and rather than running in together, they all spurned off into all different angles, running at different sections of the fans in that stand. is the fact they all wanted to celebrate with the fans first and foremost, and then they sort of all congregated together into one massive huddle. I think the only player who wasn't in there was Iverson. Well, I did have a look to see if he was having a drink down the other end. Having his little celebration, as goalkeepers regularly do. But yeah, it was that sort of that raw emotion of how important they knew that goal was, and how important they knew it was for the fans as well. They wanted to sort of share that moment. So they did it individually with the fans, and then they sort of shared it as a unit and as a team together. And I really thought that shows, you know, that this group of players, I think, are maybe a bit more in tune with each other and with us than we maybe give them credit for at times.
Yeah, I think this. Yeah, it kind of washed away the whole he's lost the dressing room rumours, if I'm honest. I think it was Berger who actually looked towards the bench and was just fist bumping the air with both hands. Laurent sliding when he wasn't even in, who scored. He's on his knee sliding to the fans. It was just chaos. I didn't catch all of it, to be honest. I was too busy bear hugging everyone around me who I've never even spoken to before. But yeah, I've watched it back, and yeah, like you say, everyone's just kind of, it was kind of like a relief celebration, wasn't it? Everyone's just gone running and jumping, and just in their own head is just screaming, thank God for that. But yeah, it definitely showed they've got some unity within the team. And just to bring up, Baker actually did, spoke to the media after, it was Laurent, and he was asked about, obviously, being captain, how's he kind of got the players, got them up for it, basically. And he said that all of the senior lads in the team have basically had meetings together, multiple meetings together, and they've basically given each other some home truths, not to be nasty, but, and the key bit from that was he said they've, like, it was realization, like they've come to realize like where they are and the facts they shouldn't be there. I mean, not to say they shouldn't be there, but yeah, they've come to terms of where they are. And
they have the ability to be higher up the table.
And they basically discussed between themselves as players how they're going to fix this, and basically got themselves up for it, which to me is unity on another level. So yeah, I think the rumours are just that, and the rumours, because the celebrations in the team today told me different.
Yeah, for sure. And on the point of celebrations, I think I jumped about 10 feet in the air when the first goal went in, when Jono scored. Which, you know what, I literally was in a seat. I jumped out of my seat. I was like, hit it, and then he did. And I jumped up and out of my seat. And you know what, for a long time, when we've scored, it's been a stand up and applaud, you know, maybe a fist pump if it was a big goal. But that there was the first massively celebrated goal I think I've done to that extent in a long, long time. It felt like that big. And yeah, so thank you, Stoke, for giving me that moment today.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. These are the reasons why we go to football. But yes, I think unless there's anything else, we'll choose some man of the match, some early man of the match results at you.
Yeah, go on.
So who would your pick have been? It's a tough one for the right reasons today, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I chose three on there because I couldn't decide. But I'm gonna have to go with John Howe. He was absolutely immense.
Well, you went with the right one because he got 69 votes so far, which is 50%. So this bit of poll's only been up about an hour. And it's, yeah, got 138 votes on it already. So, yeah, John Howe with 50% of the votes. A few people voted for all the team, which I think that's fair enough. Not individually, but as a team, I think called all the team.
Yeah, more fair enough.
A few people put Super Johnny Walters. A few people put the fans. I thought, yes, the fans would have been close for man of the match. Second place, though, was Lewis Baker with 13% of the vote. And third place goes to Keanu Hoover with 5%. So it's a good job Mike's not here. He'd be fuming.
Oh, no. That's why he hasn't come on. That's why he hasn't come on.
I have seen as well, Manhoof is also in joint third with 5% as well. The only player who hasn't got any votes is Brewer Ennis up front. He's run his little legs off all day for nothing.
Yeah, poor Ennis. He's like the Brown player we've been missing, isn't he? Just runs.
Yeah. But yes, brilliant. Well done, Stoke. Well done to the supporters who were there. Fantastic. Thoroughly enjoyable Saturday afternoon. And we haven't been able to say that far enough in the last few years, have we? Let's hope it's a turning point. We have had a few false dawns, haven't we, over the last few years. Let's hope that this one is the start of something that actually builds into something very special.
Fingers crossed.
Let's get into the news.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So the under-18s, well, they had a bit of a humdinger. They won 5-3 at home to Nottingham Forest on Saturday. All 8 goals coming in the first half. So his own goal started it all off before Josh Maskell, Luke Enright and a Jaden Ogbabor brace for Stoke. They were actually 5-1 up after 39 minutes it was going at half-time at 5-3, and that's where it stayed at full-time. This week, the under-18s, they host Wolves on Saturday at 11 a.m. kick-off at Clayton Wood. So the under-21s, they're going to play twice this week, so they're going to take on Crystal Palace at the Bet365 Stadium on Monday with a 7 p.m. kick-off. And then they travel to Southampton for a 7 p.m. kickoff on a Friday. So a nice trip down to the south coast there to round off a busy week. So the women, they lost 4-1 to Newcastle at the Emirates Stadium on Sunday. Obviously against the league's only pro side. Heidi Logan was the goal, but it was nothing more than a consolation for the Potters there. And this coming Sunday, they then travel to Fylde for their next game, which is a 2 p.m. kickoff next Sunday. Just a little bit of news that's broke since the last pod is the Huddersfield game, which is at home and going to be on Sky now. So it's still going to be on Easter Monday, still 3 a.m. kickoff, but the game will be on Sky TV. Right, let's get into Leeds. So, we have met Leeds 96 times. We have 31 wins, 18 draws, 47 defeats. At Elland Road, we have 48 matches, 6 victories, 12 draws and 30 losses. Recently, we've lost both of our league visits to Elland Road since relegation, scoring once and conceding 8 goals. So, not a great recent record. A little bit better, though, was that our biggest ever win away at Leeds was a 4-0 victory in 2006, which actually kick-started the club's promotion charge, which resulted in returning to the top flight some 18 months later. Stephen Schumacher's record against both Leeds and their manager Daniel Farker is the same, which was the one game 2-1 loss at Elland Road in November. Interestingly though, Luke Cundall did set up the Plymouth goal that day. Maybe he could be in line for a return to the starting lineup. Daniel Farker's record against Stoke is a bit more meat on it, so he's 2 wins, 2 defeats and the 1 draw. 4 games whilst he was in charge of Norwich and 1 at Leeds. And he's hosted Stoke twice before, which was both as Norwich manager with a 4-1 victory and a 1-0 defeat.
Now, Stoke's away form. They have 16 points, which puts them 19th in the away table. They've lost their last three on their travels after going four unbeaten before that. And in the last five matches, they've got 6 points, which puts them 16th in the form table. Leeds is home form. They have 43 points from their home forms, which puts them top of the home table. They were unbeaten at home all season and have won 13 out of their last 14 home league games. So, yeah, it feels going to be an easy game, I reckon. Last five matches as well, they have 13 points, which puts them second in the form table. Leeds' draw away at Huddersfield on Saturday ended in one of nine consecutive championship wins, which ended just one short of the league record. Only Stoke have used more than Leeds' 33 players, whilst only Sunderland's side has been younger than Leeds' average age of 24.6 years. Stoke have more yellow cards, 87, than anyone in the division, whilst Leeds, with just 54, have the lowest. Both teams have two reds. Stoke have the third most switches of play, whilst Leeds have the second lowest. So that could be an interesting tactical sort of play there. Jorginho Rutter has 12 assists, which is the joint most of the division, with Leif Davies and Keenan Dewsbury Hall, while Cesario Somerville has 23 goal involvements, which is only bettered by Morgan Whittaker and Adam Armstrong with 24 and 28 respectively. Haxa Banovic though with 22.2% and Berger 68.4%. They're both in the top seven in the championship for successful take-ons. So yeah, that's an interesting sort of positive stat there, Stoke. Especially if Haxa Banovic returns to the side. Only four players have made more substitute appearances than Jadon Anthony with 22 this year. Rutter now, he's involved in quite a few fouls, 55 fouls, which is the third highest in the league for him, whilst he is also the league's most foul player, having been fouled 84 times so far this campaign. Only Alex Palmer at West Brom has kept more clean sheets than Melier in goal for Leeds. Whilst this is an interesting one, Jack Bonham has saved more points per 90 minutes relating to XG than any other keeper in the league. So when you look at, like, obviously the XG and how many goals he should have conceded compared to how many he has, and when that then transfers into points, Bonham saved more per 90 minutes than any other keeper. Yeah, surprised me too. The referee is Oliver Langford. So, yeah, 23 games he's ref this season. 77 yellows, 5 reds. He's given 2 penalties. Now, this is good for us. Just the 5 home wins, 6 draws and a whopping 12 away wins. We'll take another one of them. He ref Stoke on 17 occasions, giving us just 27 yellows, 1 red, 1 penalty for, 1 penalty against. But we only have 3 wins from them 17 matches, 4 draws and 10 defeats. He reffed us this season in the 1-0 loss at Norwich and the 0-0 draw at home to Cardiff. He has reffed Leeds on 16 occasions, giving them 21 yellows, 2 reds, 3 penalties for, 3 against. They have 8 wins, 3 draws and 5 defeats when he's got the whistle. And he's reffed them this season 3 times all away from home. 1-1 draws at Salford and Rotherham and a 3-0 victory at Cardiff. On this day, 5th of March 2003, Chris Greenacre scored the only goal as Stoke beat Brighton 1-0 to move themselves out of the relegation zone in the Championship. But yes, hopefully that's an omen. Right, let's listen now. So we've got some audio from, obviously, the man, the myth, the legend, Graham McGarry. And also from Adonis, who runs a Leeds podcast.
Hello there, you Potter's Predictors. Nice to catch up with you as you get ready for a midweek game at the passionate place of Elland Road, where you take on Leeds United, third in the table, but you've also got to be able to stay in the game and silence those supporters. Well, you got the win. It was a relief as well on Saturday to beat Middlesbrough by 2-0. It's a tall order to try and get something back from Elland Road, but will that give them some confidence? Well, it surely should do, even though many people people will not be giving Stoke a chance. But football's a funny old game, as we know, over the many, many years that we've followed it and reported on it and give predictions. Not easy to get predictions right in the Championship. So, this will be a surprise if it happens. Leeds United 1, Stoke City 1.
Hi Dan, it's Adonis from the Roaring Pickup podcast. Leeds have just had a club record winning streak ended by 10-man Huddersfield, but still it is 28 out of 30 points so far in 2024 for the Peacocks. You asked about our style. Our style is a possession-based 4-2-3-1. We play quite cautiously most of the time. If one fullback goes forward, the other will sit back. We're best in transition. That's part of the reason why we dominate after scoring first. We struggle most against teams who sit deep and defend well against us. We have trouble breaking them down. Nearly every team who tries to take the game to us comes unstuck on the counter. And that's how we did the double over teams like Leicester and Ipswich. The Leeds fans' feeling and confidence is cautiously high. Obviously, winning 9 games in a row makes anyone a believer. But the table is so tight at the top that it does feel like every game is a must-win. The anxiety is not pleasant, but that is part of being a Leeds fan in general. And it's better to have a meaningful season than finishing mid-table, for example. Obviously, you guys have the opposite issue, which we had the last 2 seasons, which is not fun. Players to watch out for, obviously, include Crescencio Somerville, who Huddersfield successfully doubled up on, even when they had 10 men. So they had 10 men, 2 were on Somerville at all times. We have loads of players who can have a great game, but Somerville has been the one to consistently perform with goals and assists for us. The other player I'd suggest you keep an eye on is Archie Gray. He's the teenager having a breakout season, and he comes from a family who have had a member in a Leeds starting 11 for 25% of the club's games since the 1960s. You asked my thoughts on Stoke. I'll be honest, apart from the meme of a cold Tuesday night, I rarely think about Stoke. Sorry, it's nothing against you guys. I just mostly think about Leeds, probably like you mostly think about your team. It's good to see Lewis Baker has found a home. He never looked settled in his spell with us. I remember beating you guys 3-1 in Bielsa's first game in charge. And beforehand, before the start of that season, you guys were one of the favourites to return to the Premier League. So I am surprised to see a club of your history in the relegation zone. You also asked for a prediction. I'm going to have to predict a return to winning ways for Leeds United back at home under the lights at Elland Road. A solid 3-0 win for the Whites. Sorry, guys. But good luck for the rest of the season after Tuesday. Cheers.
Right then. Thank you for that, Adonis. And thank you, of course, to Graham, who has remembered that we are actually playing away. So he sort of forgot. I don't know if that went under the radar and people noticed, but Graham thought we were playing at the Riverside on Saturday. We weren't.
So did I, with the picture.
But yes, right, Tom. How are we gonna? What are we gonna do here? Are we going for 2 wins and 2? Are we? We've got a tough game at Preston at the weekend. Are we prioritising that? God forbid, and resting a few. Do we just leave it in the fate of Shuri Roulette? Anywhere you can see, any weaknesses you can see in Leeds, any chinks in the armour, hit me with it. What? How are we going to win?
I think what you just said there is a very good point. The chances of us getting anything are slim, and I think we've got a better chance at Preston. So it's a case of, do we go for it at Leeds? And then this still losing, and then probably then losing to Preston too, because it's the third game in a week, or do we rest players and risk getting an absolute pelting and goal difference becoming even worse than what it already is? I think personally, I'm 50-50 between keeping the same team and system and basically just parking the bus and hoping for the best, and trying to grind out a point. But on the back of that performance and the atmosphere and what the atmosphere is like around the club in the minute, I can see Shuey going for it with a couple of changes.
Yeah, it's a real tough one, isn't it? Because you just think the impact, if we could get, even if it was just a point from Leeds, just the positivity and everything else that would come back from that, it'd just be immense, wouldn't it? But like I say, if you're playing the long game, and if you're looking at these fixtures and thinking where are our best chances of picking up points in certain weeks of the season, then you would say we're more likely to get something from Preston than Leeds. And I look at it, I think you can't underestimate how much that game against Middlesbrough could well have taken out of these players. And I'm talking physically, emotionally. You know, they had all the build up. You know, we had all the build up. They weren't shielded from that. They were well involved with all that, weren't they? You know, they had meetings. Like you said, they had meetings with Walters. You said after, you know, Loren was saying they'd been meeting with each other. Everything was put into that game. And it was like, we must win, and they did. And like I say, how much that can physically and emotionally take out of you, to ask them then to do what is probably up there as one of the two probably toughest games that you will have this season. And, you know, Leeds have probably only put Leicester away in front of it. So to go to Elland Road, to a team who've won more points at home than any other in the division, and ask them, you know, a team who had won 9 games in a row before Saturday, and you want them then to get themselves back up and to do that. And even if, I mean, I said into that, I believe these players are good footballers, maybe fragile, whatever, even with the best one in the world, they can be very good championship footballers and still go to Leeds and lose. And if they do that, and like you say, they've expended so much energy on Saturday, and then they go to Tuesday and they're going to be chasing the ball for such a long time, they're going to be on edge, they're going to have to concentrate so much. Even if they're behind, they're going to have to keep concentrating to stop it, the, you know, Leeds just going and going and going. And you think, what's going to be left of them for Preston on Saturday if they do that? Now, defensively, I think the back four is going to have to be the back four, isn't it? Because to me, we haven't got the options. And also with Thompson back from his ban on Saturday, there is one option that you can just refresh some legs with Gooch at left back if you wanted to. But yeah, we haven't really got, unless you wanted to bring Clark in and go 5 at the back, there isn't really any, or maybe go 3 centre half, put a Hoover on the right hand side and put Lloris as a right wing back. Other than that, I think the defence sort of picks itself. Yep.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, it goes back to what I said earlier. I'm 50-50 on whether to keep the system or amend it slightly, just because obviously it's Leeds, it's a whole other kettle of fish. I think I could see him go with the 5 at the back, if I'm honest with what you said. Hoover's the right centre back, Levis on the right, and usually what he tends to do with that is Levis will push forward and Hoover will come across and it'll kind of turn into a back four whilst we're on the attack. It's going to be very tough, but like you said earlier, it's the championship. Stranger things have happened. I know they're unbeaten in however many it is now, but these things come to an end. I mean, look at Leicester. Was it they lost 2 in 32, and now they've lost the last 3, including today against QPR, which I'm just looking at the stats for that game, actually. QPR had 3 shots all game and scored 2. And Leicester had 18 and scored one with 74% possession. So if we could do something like that, if it's scrappy, I really don't care. Just try and keep it out and hopefully we can nick one on the other end.
Yeah, I think I'd take that. I'm quite happy to, I mean, I say this, I'll see what my heart says when we actually living through being 1-0 up and having shots pelted at us left, right and centre. I think as well, like I think I mentioned earlier on, that Leeds just keep throwing more and more attackers on, don't they? That is sort of their game plan of, okay, this isn't, we aren't winning, let's just shove another striker on. Let's just shove another striker on and another one. And I think what happens is they sort of end up maybe losing the shape a bit and you can probably take advantage of that as sort of, you know, as they go across. I mean, look at their attacking options here. They brought on sort of Jayden Anthony, who'd scored two against Chelsea. Didn't he score against? It was Matteo Joseph, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So they've got Matteo Joseph, who scored two against Chelsea in the week. They've got Jayden Anthony on the striker. They've got Dan James. They've got Joel Pirro. They've got Bamford. They've got Somerville. They've got Rutter, who's got more assists than anyone in the league. They've got Nonto. So, I think going forward is probably their strength, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, it's borderline unfair, that. that's really not fair. I mean, you made a good point the other day that, you know, they played Chelsea midweek last week. They got a Yorkshire derby today. And then they got a Yorkshire derby after us on Saturday as well against Sheffield Wednesday. So whether they will rest some players like they did at our place where we managed to nip it 1-0, I wouldn't be against them resting Rosser and Somerville, let's put it that way.
No, exactly. And I think they'll probably will sort of, you know, jig around with that sort of forward line. I think who played last night, so they had Nonto, Rutter, Somerville and Bamford. Wouldn't surprise me if all four of them didn't start the game on Tuesday. And like I say, they brought in sort of, you know, Joseph and Dan James, for example. So it, and sort of Anthony and that. So with that, and you mentioned there about the Chelsea game, didn't you? It's such a shame that game didn't go to extra time. I would have loved them to have an extra half an hour chasing the ball at Stamford Bridge. So I suppose the interesting thing there is obviously they've had 9 league wins in a row, so they are in that, and teams do get in that sort of routine, don't they, of go out and win the game, go out and win the game, go out and win the game. And it's interesting when it goes on for such a long time, bear in mind it was like this entire calendar year they'd won every league game. When that all of a sudden stops, I think we've seen this with Leicester, aren't we, at the minute, in Southampton. Southampton, was it 25 games unbeaten? And then
yes,
their form. I mean, they showed a bit of courage, a bit of guts to come back at St Andrews, didn't they, against Birmingham this weekend to win 4-3. But they're another one who, when that run ends, it can take 3-4 games before you sort of get going again. And I just wonder, like I say, 9 consecutive league wins, the record is 10 of all time. So I was actually hoping they beat Huddersfield because I thought no one's ever won 11 in a row. So if they win the 10th, then the blip is only, that blip and that off game is going to be one game closer, whether it's Stoke. So obviously they've done that. They've been to Chelsea. They put all that effort in there, but came up short. I know they made a few changes, I believe, for that game as well. But the game, like I say, still lost last minute. That will have hurt. They've then gone to Huddersfield. They've gone behind. Huddersfield have gone down to 10 men before half-time, and they could still only draw with them. So, again, local derby, there'll probably be a few bruised egos that they didn't win the game, a few bruised bodies from obviously the tackles and sort of the game and as it played out. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if we are playing them and catching them at a good time. For me, I'm going to sort of pop into my sort of team here. I think I'm going to go with the three centre backs. I wouldn't like to have changed it. If we were playing Preston midweek and Leeds at the weekend, I'd have stuck with a back four on that. But for this game, I think we just need that little bit of added protection there. So I'm going to stick Hoover on the right. He's got good pace to cover. We've got obviously Wilmot in the middle and sort of Rose in there as well on the sort of the left hand side. We're going to have Gooch at left wing back, Lloris right wing back. We're going to have Berger sitting in the midfield. And I think I'm going to be sitting there with, he's going to be sitting in there with Pearson and Baker. So I'm going to have the three of them in the midfield, and then I'm going to be playing, I mean, I think I've said it a few times lately, but I would like to see is Ennis up front, and I'm going to have Manhoff sort of buzzing around off him. And I think if I was the manager, if it went sort of, I don't know, say 2-0, I would not hesitate in changing those forward players and maybe looking at, you know, because you've got options. It's not like you're throwing the game away. You've got decent players to bring on. But yeah, say we went 2-0 down, or we were 2-0 down at half-time, I wouldn't be sending any out for the second half, or man, you know, you can put Vidigal and Campbell up front, and I'm sure Vidigal would, you know, relish playing in a more central role. I think he's far more dangerous in them sort of areas. But yeah, I think that team, we're not have much of the ball, are we? Let's face it, mate. So for me, I think we need to be a team who pick up the ball and sort of drive forward really quickly, move through the gears going forward quickly, and get it from our penalty box to their penalty box before they can get men back and regroup, because they are going to be sending people forward. And I think that is the best thing, because I think, like I say, Manhoff, he hasn't got a set position there. He can pick up areas. He's going to have a lot of space to move into. And if nothing else, if he starts getting the ball and becomes a danger and they start sort of watching him, you know, more closely and getting closer to him in the areas he drifts into, then that gives him a perfect opportunity to drag defenders into wide areas and places like that they don't want to be. And then that plays into Ennis's game then, because that gives Ennis more space for people to play, you know, Baker and Berger and that to play him in. So yeah, that's my sort of tactics for it. I do think, like I said, I think we're going to be spend a lot of the game without the ball, a lot of the game under cosh, and I wouldn't be against some early substitutions, half time and early second half if we are losing to protect the legs for future games. I would probably understand that.
Yeah. Somewhat on the same level, to be fair. I would go, I think Iverson, I think his distribution wasn't too good today, but, you know, he made that big save, so hopefully that gives him a bit of confidence, because I watched him quite a bit at Leicester, and he is a good shot stopper. I think he's just been a bit off. I'm going to go with Hoover, Rose, McNally, back three. I'm also going to go Levis on the right, Gooch on the left. And this is where I was a bit tied up with it now, because I don't really want to lose any of the midfield three from today, but we need to rest legs. So I'm also going to go Pearson just for the added cover. I'm going to go Berger. And then I'm actually going to use a front three. I'm going to go Ennis, Campbell, and Bay. I think Bay, I think Bay just has to be on for me. I think he's, if we're going to play one of them games where it's counter-attacking and we're soaking up the pressure and hitting fast, I think Bay's definitely someone who can make something happen on the counters. And just going back to the actual tactics, I think if we can get to half-time 0-0 somehow, and then we come into the second half and say we get to around the 60th minute, I would not be against switching it to a 4-3-3 and just trying to give it a go. And usually when that happens, if a team's throwing pressure at you all game, and all of a sudden you flip the switch and you give it them back, you can catch them out sometimes. But yeah, even getting to 60th minute is a big ask, but weirder things have happened, especially this weekend and last weekend, where every team around us has decided to start beating the top six. But yeah, that's what I'm going with.
And it's goddamn championship.
It's definitely, it's got to be the most entertaining league. It's just ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, what was that sent earlier? I'm just trying to get it up now. So Watford in 12th, Stoke 22nd, 6 points separating bottom three and top half with 11 games to go. Like, that is nuts.
It's like, if we'd have won one more game, we wouldn't be 22nd, we'd be, is it 15th, 16th?
Yeah, I mean, even if we had won two games, we'd be joint 12th. So you think that how many games have we thrown away with one silly mistake this season? It's got to be four or five. If we had won even three of them, we'd be top off. It's so close, and being bottom three is not good, but I think today, especially when you've looked at the league after the results, it's so close. Two games can take you from bottom three to top half. It's nuts.
Right. Is there anything else you want to add, mate, before we get into sort of Super Six gaffer?
No, nothing for me, mate.
Right, so we're getting close to the end of this pod now, so let's just look at some Super Six. So, Mike's not here, but I can tell you he got 10 points this week. Now sits 68th in the table with 319 points, whilst I picked up 14 this weekend to move up to 46th overall with 336. The top scorer for the week was Nathan Brown with a whopping 24 points, so well done to you, mate. And the top scorer for February was Adam Baines, who got 80 points during last month. Overall, though, Nicholas Yates still leads the way on 397, Sean Flanagan on 396. And then there's a three-way tie for third now on 387 between Sean Hume, Michael Gadgety and Michael Hazeldean. Gaffer, I've moved up again, another place, 33rd, woo! 76 points I picked up this week, to move to 1985. Top score for the week was FPL Toffee Tim, who got 126. Whilst Stoker's Bay still leads the way, followed by At Thurwood Joe and Mr. Cadry back up into third.
Right, Tom, would you like a Who Am I? Usually Mike throws a Who Am I at me, so I have a hastily arranged one. Would you like to see if you can find who I am?
Go on, I'll give it a go. As long as it's within my error.
I had two spells at Stoke City between 2006 and 2013, making 109 league appearances, scoring 11 goals.
Ooh, 2006 and 2013. I'm not sure on that one.
Okay, so I was sent out on loan to Royal Antwerp in Belgium, but after an incident involving the referee after a lost playoff game at the end of the season, I was banned from football for 12 months, although that was reduced to 4 on appeal.
Oh, who was that? It's on the tip of my tongue. Who played for Royal Antwerp in Stoke? Was it Delay? Delay?
No, although he did play for Royal Antwerp. Right. But not, yes. Stoke were not the only team in red and white stripes that I played for. I also played for Southampton, Sunderland and Sheffield United.
Southampton, Son, Burnley, Sheffield United. Southampton, Sheffield United. Oof.
No.
Nothing's coming to me.
I made my international debut in November 2013 at the age of 34.
So he was 34 in 2013, and he joined Stoke in 2013.
No, he left Stoke in 2013.
Oh, he left Stoke in 2013.
Yeah, he joined in 2013. Well, he had two spells between 2006 and 2013.
Ah, okay. Wasn't Cameron, was it?
No, it wasn't Cameron. The fifth clue I'll give you, I scored the winning goal in the FA Cup quarter final against West Ham with a
Yeah, Danny Higginbottom. That one got me.
Yes. So, Danny Higginbottom started off at Man United, went out on loan to Royal Antwerp for the season. He then went to Derby, then he went to Southampton, then to Stoke, then to Sunderland for a year, then back to Stoke. Couple of loan spells before he joined Sheffield United. His international career, it was for Gibraltar.
Yes, it was Gibraltar, wasn't it? I was just thinking, because I thought, I swear he's English. Yeah, I forgot about the whole Gibraltar saga.
Yes, so he played for Gibraltar in November. He retired from club football in the January, but carried on playing for Gibraltar for another 6 months or so. And then, yes, obviously he scored the winning goal in the quarterfinal, but never made the semis or the final, did he? Because he injured his knee, and that was it.
Yeah, it's a great free kick, that, though. I think I'm pretty sure I was there that day.
Didn't he score one similar against Newcastle as well a couple of weeks earlier?
Yeah, I think he did, yeah. Because I don't think he'd even taken a free kick before, had he? And then he just started smashing the middle left right centre. I don't even think he was aiming. He just hit him as hard as he could and looked for the best. But
yeah,
he got us to Wembley, so yeah, I'll take it.
I know, you see him doing that with free kicks from like 25 yards. And you think, I wonder what goalkeepers must have thought when he was taking penalties from 12.
I know. Yeah, he could hit one, couldn't he? Yeah.
Please, God, I don't want to save this. Let it go. It's either going in the net or missing the target, because I ain't saving it. I'm jumping out the way.
Yeah, a quick jump after it goes in just to make it look good.
Well done, mate. You've got it anyway. You got it on the fifth clue. Well done. Let's hope for the best. Let's keep the faith with them regardless of what happens on Tuesday. You know, it's going to be a tough game. It doesn't matter who we select, who we play. You know, Leeds are a damn good side, aren't they, in this division? And let's hope that we can build on our results and their sort of little blip over the past few couple of games. That sort of grows. So, yes, go on, Stoke.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.